From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, we're inching closer to a scheduled adjournment of the spring session, but still on the to-do list, a state budget. And despite Democrats having supermajorities in the legislature, some of Governor Pritzker's plans to raise revenue are getting a cool reception. That's prompted the governor to send letters to agency heads telling them to prepare for possible spending cuts. We'll talk about that. Also, a Pritzker plan to end the grocery tax. It has some communities worried. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And with us from the State House, we have Brendan Moore, a reporter for Lee Enterprises. Brendan, it's good to have you on the show, and also thanks for dipping out of a legislative hearing to give us some feedback.
Always happy to be on, Sean. For you guys, anytime.
Brendan, the news came down this week that the Deputy Governor Andy Menar sending a letter to agency heads warning if the governor's plans for some new revenue are not approved, the state could have about $800 million less to work with. So he's sort of telling them to get ready for potential budget cuts. What do you make of this at this point? Is this a serious letter that was sent out, or do you think this is just some type of posturing that the administration's trying to do here near the end of session?
I think it's a serious letter, but I also think it's part of the dance. Obviously, we're a couple weeks out from the scheduled end of legislative session, and it's been a very quiet session so far. Really, the focus has been almost solely on the budget, and which is an important issue every year, but it seems to be the issue this year. The governor in February gave his budget address, and he had a number of investments that he wants to continue, such as his Smart Start and more money for evidence-based funding for schools and a number of other initiatives. But in order to balance his budget, it relied upon a series of revenue enhancements. So he had proposed, for instance, raising the tax imposed on sports books, or reinstituting a cap on the losses you can claim, businesses can claim, that was due to sunset, and that was going to raise about $500 million. So there were a little bit here and there that the governor's kind of relying upon as revenues have started to tighten post-COVID. But he's run into some opposition in the legislature, specifically among supermajority Democrats, specifically in the House. And so the deputy governor issued this memo that basically said, okay, fine, if we have to balance the budget, so if we have to do it without this extra revenue, then we're going to have to make cuts. So it was a message to agency directors, but it might as well have been a message to legislators, basically saying that if you don't want to consider these revenue enhancements, and that can be understandable. It is an election year. Elected officials don't never like to vote for tax increases, but especially when they're facing voters in a few months. But that there will be consequences to the state budget if some of these proposals are not considered. So, again, we have a couple more weeks. End of May, there's always kind of this posturing going on back and forth with legislators and with the executive branch. And I think that's really what this is. It's all a negotiation.
Charlie, we do see this happen in the final weeks of the legislative session in a lot of years. This one here, I'm sure the sports betting lobby is pretty strong, and that may be hurting the governor's cause a bit. And also when you have some companies and they see an opportunity to roll back some tax, or in this case, you do away with this cap on the losses that they can claim on taxes. Of course, you're going to get, a pretty hard lobbying effort here, but does this going more public seem to be a sign of maybe that the governor's got some trouble ahead here? Is this just something that you think is more of setting the stage for negotiations in the final weeks?
Well, I think it's kind of a wake-up call for some lawmakers, particularly the ones who haven't been around a long time, that we really do have to kind of tighten our belts. It's not that our revenues are cratering or anything. As a matter of fact, the governor's Office of Management and Budget put out an update a few days ago saying that the revenues that they're anticipating for FY25, the coming fiscal year, are going to be up $295 million more than what they thought they were going to be when the governor's budget was introduced back in February, with the status quo on the revenue picture. But they're also trying to point out that, you know, you guys are going to have to choose. If you want all this good stuff, you're actually going to have to bite the bullet and increase some of these taxes. And you mentioned the sports book. As a matter of fact, right before we started taping the show, I got a robocall from somebody urging me to make my voice heard, press whatever, press one or two, to object to this horrible tax on sports books. I'm thinking to myself, and maybe I'm an outlier here, but if I were a lawmaker, voting to increase the tax on sports books would be one of the easiest ways to raise revenue. Because if you think about it, income taxes, you have to pay no matter what. Sales taxes, you have to pay no matter what. Property taxes, you have to pay no matter what. On the other hand, going to a sports book, in a sense, it's sort of like you choose to do it. It's an optional endeavor or optional thing that you like doing. It's fun for you, and you have to pay for it. And so I would not find that a hard vote at all. But there is pushback on it, and the argument is that we're going to go from 15% to 35%, which would bring us from being one of the lowest tax levels up to being one of the highest. And the governor, I forget exactly how much he's going to bring in from it, something like $200 million additional. So that would be an easy one. But as I say, it's particularly for lawmakers who haven't been around a while and haven't had to deal with really tough budgets, it's sort of a wake-up call saying, look, if you want to do all this stuff, if you want to put more money in schools, if you want to put more money in human services, if you want to put more money in some of the other programs that are sort of your pet programs, you're going to have to come up with the revenue.
Yeah,
and one of the things I thought was interesting about Menard's letter was he suggested to the department heads one of the areas you might look at are grants. And I'm thinking to myself, grants. Well, a lot of those grants are what you might call legislative initiatives. So if I'm a lawmaker and I have this pet project and suddenly the department is saying, well, we really can't afford it anymore, I may think twice about saying, oh, no, I'm not going to vote for any tax increases.
Yeah, and Brendan, I think when it comes to the sports books, the way I've understood that, that tax is paid by the sports books. It's not paid by the individual bettor. They still get the odds that they get, and maybe there's some type of formula there that, you know, could come back on them. But really, it's not something you're going to notice like you would, say, an income tax, even a sales tax, all these different taxes you pay. This is a little bit different, right?
You're exactly right, Sean. This would be paid by, you know, your DraftKings and your FanDuel and others that operate within the state of Illinois. They would argue, as many would argue when there's a tax increase, that, oh, well, we're going to have to pass it down to our customers. But as Charlie alluded to, I mean, this is a choice. I mean, you can't really get out of paying, you know, sales tax or income tax or anything like that. But, you know, participating in sports betting is a choice. It's a, you know, it, and it's, so it would be, you would think, one of those easier taxes to impose, you know, and I know I've seen in other states where they've increased taxes, sometimes the sports books will say, well, we're just going to pull up stakes and we're going to leave. In Illinois, that's not going to come to fruition, because Illinois is the fifth largest state in the country. It's a huge, huge market for sports. This one, I would say, in the realm of taxes, would probably be low-hanging fruit. But again, you know, the sports books are lobbying very hard against it. And, you know, it, we will see if they are successful at killing this.
Before we move on from the budget, Charlie, you talked about the Governor's Office of Management and Budget with a new revenue picture. You know, all I've heard for the last several months has been, you know, things look pretty good for the state and, in fact, doing better than expected. And, you know, what is the real problem for those that don't follow the financial status of the state all that well? We're certainly paying our bills on time. Things look a lot better than they did before than just a few years ago. But is it this loss of federal COVID aid, things like that, that are coming up that are really going to put the squeeze on the state?
No, I think it's just that, as I indicated earlier, the state has managed its money really well. We got a lot of COVID money. We used most of it for one-time things. We didn't use the COVID money to hire a whole bunch of new people, and now suddenly we don't know how we're going to pay for them because we no longer have the COVID money. And it's just that the demand is out there for increases for a whole bunch of stuff. And the governor put in, I think, something like $1 billion of new spending based on getting this additional revenue. The increase in the state education, the evidence-based funding formula for grants to public schools across the state, that's going to go up at least $350 million. Lawmakers would like it to go $550 million. When Brendan Johnson, the mayor of Chicago, was down here, he argued that Chicago should get $1 billion. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, in what world would that be? So the demand is always greater than the revenue available for it. And I guess the sort of the philosophical question is, do you want this stuff bad enough to actually raise taxes? And my guess is when push comes to shove, there will be enough votes to implement these revenue changes so that we can move ahead on some of these programs.
Well, let me switch to another discussion on taxes, and it's been getting a lot of attention at the local level among many municipalities, and this is a governor's plan to get rid of the grocery tax in the state. From what I have seen on this, the analysis I've seen, it would save about, you know, a dollar on $100 worth of groceries. Sometimes you may have, you know, a couple of $100 worth of groceries, so you maybe save $2. But it could really blow a hole in some local government budgets. Brendan, you followed this a bit. I haven't seen a whole lot about it except more coming from mayors and city council members in different locations. But how is this being received in the legislature?
Well, state lawmakers are hearing from their mayors and city managers about the huge impact that it's going to have on their budgets. As you mentioned, Sean, I mean, this is a very relatively small tax, has, you know, a few bucks here and there, but it has a large impact on a lot of cities. I know in, you know, some of the communities that I cover, I mean, it could mean millions of dollars lost annually to city budgets, and that is obviously money they're going to have to find elsewhere, you know, raise revenue in other ways. I think the governor, when the governor talks about this, he talks about it more from a principle perspective, I think, that just on principle, we should not be taxing groceries. It's regressive, you know, it disproportionately impacts poor people, you know, lower income people. Obviously, there are some protections there because, you know, a lot of folks, you know, use SNAP benefits, so they're kind of shielded from it. But I think that the push is, it's more about the principle than it is about, you know, it, you know, the 10 or 20 or 30 bucks that it might save, you know, somebody at the grocery store, whatever it is. How it's being received in the legislature, I think that it will be a heavy lift to get it through. Obviously, they already did a temporary pause a couple of years ago during, you know, that sky high inflation in 2022. They did a year long pause, so they've done it before. But a permanent, and especially when it has such an impact on local governments. I mean, you know, mentioned the mayor of Chicago was here earlier this week. I mean, losing the grocery tax could be, you know, over $100 million, $150 million for City of Chicago's budget. So, you know, that's something I think, especially in these tight budget times, the lawmakers are probably going to consider that, you know, if there are talks of cuts, then maybe we should not, you know, take away revenue streams, you know, if it really is kind of this tight fiscal picture that's being forecast by the governor's office.
Yeah, I've heard some mayors, some other local officials say they were blindsided by this. And then at the same time, you know, $3-4 million a year in some of these cities like Peoria, Springfield, that's a big loss of revenue. Charlie, what do you think about this? I mean, as Brendan said, they did give this break to people just a couple of years ago, but doing away with it permanently seems like it's something that probably should have a little bit more discussion with the local leaders.
Well, it strikes me when they gave the break in the past, the state also made up for the revenue loss to local governments to the tune of something like $350 million that they just passed along to the local governments in lieu of the sales tax on groceries. It's interesting. The Institute of Government and Public Affairs over at the U of I did an analysis on this, and Elizabeth Powers, who is the interim associate director at IGPA, and she's an associate professor in economics at the U of I, she used an analysis to test whether or not this would really benefit consumers all that much. And she, I'm not going to get into her complex analysis and its calculations, but one of the things that she pointed out is that many low-income people also get what used to be called food stamps, and things that are purchased with food stamps don't get charged as tax. So she calculated it would take a low-income family more than 8 years to accumulate several hundred dollars in tax savings from the elimination of the grocery tax. So the real impact is on local governments. And the governor's response is, well, we impose this tax on behalf of local government. We don't get any. The state doesn't get anything from it. So let the local government do it themselves. And again, Professor Powers notes that makes it very difficult for local governments because of the way their budgets are structured. This comes late in the game for them, and they don't really have time to go through the procedures necessary, even if they had the will to impose the tax. Because of the way their budgets are structured, they're already in their budget year, and they can't go back and do it, particularly if they're going to levy a property tax. They can't go back and do it at this point. So her conclusion at the end was savings to an individual household is very modest. The loss of tax revenue to municipalities is consequential, and the timetable caused by eliminating it on July 1st may lead to delays in implementing a local replacement. And so municipalities would either have to cut spending, hope that the state comes up with money for them in a different way.
Well, we'll keep watching that here in the final weeks of the session. One thing that doesn't appear to be moving, Brendan, you've talked about this, is the elimination of what's known as the tipped wage. This is something many local businesses have been looking at. This is where, you know, you go out to a restaurant, and those people who work for tips, they get a little bit lower pay. The tips help make up for that. That's the point of it. But there is an effort out there to do away with it. You don't think that's going to go anywhere, though, in the final weeks?
No, I mean, there was a legislative hearing on this proposal back in April, and it did get out of committee, but most of the legislators that voted for it, all Democrats, basically said they were doing it as a courtesy to the sponsor, State Representative Lisa Fernandez from Cicero. There was a lot of strong opposition from the restaurant industry and just the business community in general, but also from a lot of tip workers who are worried that, you know, what might happen should they go ahead with this, about the impact on their tips, because a lot of them do make a lot more than minimum wage, if they're working in these tip positions. So it's not going to move. Conversations are ongoing, obviously, behind the scenes. So I wouldn't say that the issue is dead, but it certainly doesn't appear like things are going to be moving this session, on this topic.
Also, Brendan, you were at the State House this week when the Chicago mayor came to town. What was the purpose of his visit?
Yeah, Mayor Johnson came down to discuss the city's priorities in the state budget. Obviously, lawmakers are working to wrap up their spring session in the next couple of weeks. And so the mayor came down to talk to the governor, talk to state lawmakers about what the city wants. His official sheet of priorities included money for lead service line replacement, an increased local government distributive fund, things of that nature. But there were also a lot of other more expensive asks that we've kind of already talked about. The mayor was on the record of saying he wants more than another $1 billion for Chicago Public Schools. Very tall task. I don't think it's going to get anywhere close to that. This point was made too, that the mayor's coming down with only 2 weeks left. And a lot of people were maybe a little bit puzzled by the timing, because it's very late in the game to be making requests for the budget. Like, that time would have been early this year when the governor was putting his proposal together and they were getting input from stakeholders. I mean, there have been people, I mean, there are advocacy groups and lobbyists that are here all session that put in requests for initiatives to be funded. So for the mayor to come in 2 weeks before and expect to get more funding for the city, I mean, it's very, very late in the game. So, but he said it was a positive visit, and I guess we'll have to see how successful it was in a couple of weeks when that budget finally passes and gets signed by the governor.
Yeah, Charlie, I mean, it is kind of late in the game, but at the same time, it's the mayor of Chicago, holds a lot of sway with a lot of lawmakers. When he comes to town, people are going to pay attention. So the issue probably is even more less about timing and more about how much money he wants and for what needs, right?
Yeah, and I would argue that my sense is, and Brendan, you probably have a better sense of this, is that the city hasn't really been that active working its agenda, like from day one of this legislative session. And for the mayor to come down with his entourage and with, what, little more than 2 weeks left to schedule the adjournment and to unveil this list of stuff, I would say it's, a day late and a dollar short. And part of it is he says that the city deserves another $1 billion in school funding. Well, here's his exact quote. The families of Chicago are owed $1 billion from the state of Illinois in order to build a better, stronger, safer city, particularly investing in our public school system. And the difficulty is that Chicago, through the evidence-based funding formula, which was adopted several years ago, and basically says the state will give you, the local school district, money to help you close the gap between what a economic evaluation of your needs based on your number of students, how many students are low income, how many students are learning English as a separate language, how many students have special needs, a whole bunch of factors. And then they say, okay, here's what you need to be fully funded. Here's what you raise locally. And here's the gap, and we will help close the gap. And the difficulty is that Chicago is closer to having its gap closed than more than 400 other school districts. And the city is facing roughly a $400 million budget gap in its schools. And part of it, from my understanding, is that the city used some of its COVID relief money to actually hire people. And now they're facing the fact that they don't have the money anymore. How are we going to pay for these folks? And so the request just to cover the Chicago gap would be more money than the state has ever put into the EBF funding from the beginning. So as I said earlier, the legislature is hoping to increase the $350 million for EBF that is required by law, and which Pritzker has in his budget. They would like to increase that by $200 million. And the fact that Mayor Johnson is talking about these huge sums, I just don't think it's going to get anywhere. And I think it was one of the people on the city council, Alderman Jeanette Taylor, remarked, well, we have to come down earlier instead of waiting to the last minute. That's a paraphrase. I'm thinking to myself, yep, that's the way it should work.
Just about 40 seconds here, Brendan. Did want to mention a column you wrote about. You had an interview with a former Democratic congressman and also a candidate for governor here in the state of Illinois, Glenn Pichard of Southern Illinois, always kind of more of a conservative Democrat. Aren't many of them left out there, but I wanted to get kind of the takeaway of what he had to say when it comes to messaging for Democrats here in an election year.
Yeah, so this is actually Glenn Pichard speaking at a Democratic State Central Committee meeting. They were talking about preparations for the convention and for the election. And he is basically like, hey, you know, we're having all this happy talk right now about all this great work we're doing, but, you know, President Biden is either tied or losing in national polls and a lot of swing state polls to former President Trump, even though he's basically sitting in a courtroom in New York right now facing trial, and basically making the point that we have to improve we as the Democrats, and that they have to improve their messaging. And they did not figure it out in that meeting, but basically his point was that, you know, the President Biden has a lot of legislative accomplishments, and that the party has to do a better job of getting that message to voters, because, you know, one reason or another hasn't broken through, and the race is basically tied right now.
All right. Well, we'll go to our notes from the field. And Brendan, let's stick with you on this one.
Yeah. So this morning, actually, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability had a hearing on the closures of the possible closures of Stateville Correctional Center and Logan Correctional Center. This is part of the process by law that that the state has to go through in order to close facilities. They heard from the department, they heard from labor, and basically COGPA will have to vote on a recommendation probably later this month or maybe early June about whether to move forward with this. It's a long process. I mean, these facilities, new facilities that get rebuilt, probably at least 5 years before they're open. We saw another turn of the screw today in the Capitol.
And Charlie?
Well, one of the governor's priorities for this legislative session is now headed on its way to his desk, and that is the creation of a new Department of Early Childhood, which will administer a variety of programs now spread across three different agencies. This new department is supposed to take care of early childhood block grants for preschools, which are now under the State Board of Education. It would also handle subsidized child care, home visits, early intervention services administered by the Department of Human Services, and licensing of daycare providers, which is now the responsibility of the Department of Children and Family Services. And the idea is that by bringing all these services under one agency, you can have sort of a one-stop shop, and you can get the services that focus on early childhood development education, you can give a better focus for them.
Well, that's all the time we have for State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Lee Enterprises' Brendan Moore. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.